is the Florida Spectacular Podcast with your hosts, Kathy Silustri and Rick Kilby. Keep up with Kathy at greatfloridaroadtrip.com and on Twitter and Instagram at Kathy Silustri. Find Rick at rickkilby.com. Now, discover a Florida you never knew existed.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to this week's episode of Florida Spectacular, the only podcast you ever need. How you doing, Rick? You laughing at me?
Yes. Yes, it is true. This is the Essential Florida Podcast. We're feeling very good about ourselves this morning.
Well, you know, it's been a long week. I know.
Yeah,
it's only Wednesday.
It already has.
I always think about when I have weeks like this. I always think about that scene from 30 Rock where Tina Fey character. Her character is walking with Alec Baldwin. She's like, what a week, huh? He's like, Lemon, it's Tuesday. I'm like, yeah, I get it. I feel that. So, Rick, are you enjoying this heat wave? This lack of rainfall?
We've had a couple of huge storms. Last night we had a huge one. You know, I have night blooming cirrus, the queen of the night, as they call
it.
Yes,
I've written about this. Yes.
I had probably 20 blossoms, which is a lot for me because I was hit hard by the freeze. And we had such a big thunderstorm last night that I couldn't go out and see them. It was probably our biggest bloom, you know, and they only last one night and then they're gone. And I missed it because of the huge thunderstorm. So the water levels are starting to creep up and plants
so
are
jealous.
Happy.
I'm so jealous. I'm putting water out for the birds and the butterflies and the bees and bird seed and trying to train my crow. It's not working. I think I'm inadvertently training blue jays, but it's a whole thing. Anyway, we have a guest today, and I should probably get along to introducing her. Heather Sellers, who is a writer, a poet, who is, because we're doing a little time travel here, by the time this podcast publishes, her book, Women in Tampa Talking About Alligators, will be for sale everywhere. And I just finished it this morning. Highly recommend it. Thank you for being on the podcast, Heather.
Thank you for having me, Kathy and Rick. It's great to meet you.
So I want to ask you, are all the poems true?
Yes.
Okay. So you lived, if I'm interpreting the poetry correctly, and I understand that it's working if I don't understand it all, you lived in Coffee Pot Bayou during the 2024 hurricanes?
Yes. Well, not 2024. No, I moved in 2021.
That is very fortuitous because, oh my God. I mean, Coffee Pot Bayou had sunny day flooding before we called it sunny day flooding. I mean, going back 20 some odd years. So,
did you live in that area, Kathy?
No. It was well known. It's legendary for, I think basically it must have been a subterranean city they dredged up when they built St. Petersburg because it just, yeah. So you live in Tampa Palms now?
38 feet above sea level.
38 feet. That's exactly how far above sea level I am in Gulfport.
Oh, you're in Gulfport.
Yes.
You got hit hard.
Yes, but we live on the ridge. So we are fortunate. We were fortunate. The city was not. I really enjoyed the book. Although I have a question. If everything's true, you have one poem where you really don't like anoles and geckos. And then, but you have no issue with alligators. And I'm like, man, you're like, oh, and I trust me, I am number one alligator fan. I
figured that's why Kathy probably booked you on the podcast because she's just a gator lover gone wild.
I am a gator advocate.
Okay. Sorry.
I'm a gator and shark advocate. So
I appreciate that. I also think we need to respect these gorgeous creatures and remember we're in their home when they come into ours.
Yes. And I mean, I had a dachshund for almost 19 years. So I got a little upset with you because I felt like you were a little derisive about the wiener dogs. But
I'll just jump in there, Kathy. Those poems in the title piece, the very long poem that's at the end, it's 11 different women. And it's in the voices of my neighbors and the women I walk around and listen to.
So that wasn't your voice.
Okay. That was not my voice.
You're forgiven.
The dachshund was, he did not come off with a good look in the poem, I'm aware.
But he lived, right?
Pardon?
Did he live?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's okay. The great story.
That's what I thought.
His friend Momo rescued him. It was dog on dog rescue.
I know a guy who scuba dives and he goes in the Peace River, and he actually was attacked by an alligator while he was scuba diving, and he got away, but only because he had a tank. I mean, he was in the death roll. He has some nerve damage, I think, in one of his calves, but he certainly was in somebody else's living room, right? So,
right,
definite so intruder.
Some people, maybe they're not from Florida, they aren't scared enough, and other people are too scared. And so, yes. I think you and I are in the same vein. Respect from a distance.
There is. I'm gonna tell this gator story. Have I told the gator down at Clyde Butcher story on the podcast yet, Rick?
Yes.
Okay.
But you can tell it again. Go ahead.
No, I feel like it's really bad when I
go ahead.
Hundreds of listeners hearing my same stories twice. It's like my poor beleaguered husband. My husband 1 year got me a Clyde Butcher's photography swamp walk. As either a Christmas or a birthday gift. They're all mushed together. So like with you, Rick. And we went through this walk and it was beautiful. And at the end, the guy who led it, who lived on Clyde Butcher's property in Big Cypress for something like 14 years, showed us a video. And had he shown me the video before we went into the walk, I'm not sure I would have gone. And it was a video he took, and I'll put a link in the show notes. It's on Instagram, of this massive bull gator that lives on the property. They call him Loose Screw. Coming out to the tour guide, and just lays down. And I said, does that not freak you out? He goes, well, I'll tell you what, the first time it happened, it did. He said, but what, you know, really, what's the logic there? You don't want to run. You don't want to trigger any type of credit, and you're not going to get anywhere anyway. But he said, then he laid down, and he says, anytime he says the gator never approaches him when he's leading tours, but when he's by himself, because he keeps the trails maintained and he has blazes up, and there's some things that are coming into that part of the Everglades that shouldn't be there that he removes. And he says that that's when he's out there doing the work, the gator will come find him and just lay down. I said, do you feed him? He's like, my God, no, I would never feed him. Doesn't touch him. But he says, it's like the gator comes out to check on him. And I said, you know, that is not, if you talk to gator wranglers at Gatorland or something like that, they will tell you that gator is always going to want to attack a human. They're very, the gators they work with, I asked one of them once that he had raised from a hatchling. And I said, so does he know you? No, he doesn't know me. Would he attack you if you took the tape off his mouth? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I said, this is not the party line. And he goes, well, maybe they should be studying them in their natural environment and not putting them in zoos. So, yeah, but it's a very cool video. And I've always really had a healthy respect for gators. But after that, something in me changed and I became a little bit more, I don't want to say I'm alligator woke, but a little sensitive to the bad press that has surrounded gators for so long. So
I am 100% with you on that. And it's partly why I wrote the book.
Really? So, are you married?
Do I have to answer that?
No, but in one of the very first poems, you say your husband says you're dead to him.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that was heartbreaking. And I was trying to figure out if that was a chronological progression in your poetry or if you bounced around. And you don't have to get too personal. It's, you know, bad enough you bared your soul in ink. So,
so that poem is about a class that I had. And it was a tough year. I was divorced. And my brother had passed away recently. And in this class, I had students with the same first name as my father, also deceased, difficult relationship, my ex-husband, and my recently passed brother. It was so intense, y'all. And so the poem is about trying not to, you know, grade them harshly, even though I'm so triggered by just seeing their names.
Wow.
It's all true, if that was answering your question.
I mean, it was just such a, I think I probably read it too fast because I always forget with poetry. I looked at your book and it was, what, 80 pages? I'm like, oh, well, and I forget poetry. I had a friend say to me, oh, I like writing poetry. It's so much faster than writing prose. And I'm thinking, yeah, but it takes so much longer to read. And yeah, I don't know if they're a good poet or not. So I can't speak to that. I've never read any of their work, but it's clearly a lot of time went into it. And I love you had some phrases, and I didn't bring it. I read it on my iPad, and I meant to, when there was something about the styrofoam egg conversations, there was a phrase you used. It was just beautiful. I really liked the language. So I read it. I need to go back and absorb it more, but that's okay.
I love to teach poetry. And the way I teach it is that the same way you're talking about it, it's language distilled. And so we read it. I say, let it read the poem like rain. The words are rain falling on dry earth. Just let it come to you. And then you want to reread just slowly and gently, but not attacking it. So it's fine to read it quickly. My poems are very conversational.
Yes.
And I want you to be able to walk away after a first read, even a quick read, and still have gotten something.
It really made me regret that I stopped writing poetry. And this is the point in the podcast where I want to give a huge, giant, cavernous fuck you to my 10th grade English teacher, Mrs. Parker, because she was my English teacher. She was an honors English teacher at Clearwater High. She's dead. I don't care if she is or not. I specifically did not thank her. And I made a point of saying, I do not thank you in the acknowledgments of Florida Spectacular, because in 10th grade, she asked me what I planned to do for a living. And I said, I wanted to be a writer. And she laughed in my face and said, Kathy, all you care about is writing poems. You'll never be a writer.
Ooh.
And I wrote poems for a few years, but I just pretty much gave up on it. And reading women in Tampa talking with alligators, and I'm worried I'm going to get that wrong, really made me, you know, I always say people don't deserve the energy of hate, but it really made me regret knowing her ever, because
maybe it inspired you though.
I was going to be a writer no matter what. I mean, I knew that from fifth grade on. It took me a while to get there, but no, I mean, to make fun of somebody for writing poetry is just such a horrible thing to do. Now, granted, you're not making a living off your poetry books alone, right? You said you teach, so that's to get the second mega yacht, I'm sure, right?
I apologize on behalf of my profession for Mrs. Parker's misdeeds.
she wasn't a poet.
I think there's a lot. Well, I'm speaking as a teacher. I think there's a lot of English teacher trauma out there, and I call it job security. My mission in life is to bring poetry to students who are terrified. They've been Parkerized, like you were. Like some bad thing has happened to them.
I love that verb, Parkerized. Well,
it's our T-shirt for the week.
Don't get Parkerized.
It's such a shame. And poetry is meant to be in the world of the people, accessible, available, meaningful. There could be humor. There can be sadness. I like to think about it as like a beautiful painting or piece of music, all the colors of all the emotions in my poetry books. This is my fifth one. And I want there to be all of the emotions, and I want them to be available to you. I am a poet. I'm a professor, and I can't stand those poems where I don't even know what is it about. I don't even know.
I mean, so obviously you don't have that problem I can actually say that you did a very, you did it, not very, I hate that word. You really did an exquisite job with putting people in a sense of place. Like I could see your Tampa Palms neighborhood. And I don't think I've ever been to Tampa Palms. I've been past it. I've been to Bruce P. Downs. That's enough. And Coffee Pot, I could picture exactly what was happening. The bridge. Was the bridge Coffee Pot or Tampa? It doesn't matter. When you were kayaking, I assume you were kayaking the Intracoastal from Treasure Island, and you could see the Don Cesar in the distance with the egret.
Yeah, it's actually, I'm putting in off of Vina Del Mar, right off past, back behind there.
Okay, because you said Treasure Island, and that's a little bit north. But yeah, I could picture there was a great bird rookery right there. I mean, it was very vivid, and it was not E.E. Cummings. It was,
right.
You know, with no disrespect, but you know, everybody and in high school, when we talked about poetry, I remember E.E. Cummings and Emily Dickinson, who I know you're probably going to hate me for this, Heather. I can't stand her. I cannot stand her poetry. I don't know if that's how it was taught, or I just think she was a simpering wimp. But she's just not for me.
You need me. You just need a great teacher and a good my whole game is just flipping people. I'm like a preacher. I'm just converting the innocent to poetry. I can teach you some Emily Dickinson. That's a different podcast for a different day.
Yes. Well, she didn't write about Florida, so she will never be on this podcast.
Different podcast.
Different podcast. Anyway, how did you start writing poetry?
I think like you, I was always going to be a writer. I always knew. I was never not writing it. My parents had this collection of books. They're these red-bound books. Maybe you had them. And it was Ogden Nash. And he is a comic poet. They're all limericks. There's a lot of rhyme. And he's just hilarious.
Wasn't he a political also? Or am I thinking of, no, I'm thinking of Thomas Nash. Forget me.
Ogden Nash, not just an American poet. Who probably wasn't taken very seriously, but I took it very seriously. And I think he got into my writer DNA. And I just always thought I can connect with other people through humor, but through the beauty of language. I never distinguished my nonfiction, my fiction, or my poetry. I'm a writer who writes, and I try to delay that decision. What genre is it as late as possible? I always knew I was going to be a writer.
I have a question about one of the places in your poem, Eureka Springs, because I'm a spring geek, and it's so you're talking about Eureka Springs in Tampa?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
It's this amazing little secret park right off I-4. Is that the one you're thinking of, Rick?
So it was in one of your poems. I knew there was one in Tampa.
Yeah.
I mean, I know about Purity Springs, which is by Sulphur Springs, but yeah, tell me about
It's like now mostly devastated, right? Mostly paved over, but there's this little protected pocket. It's so magical. You have to go there. In the 30s, an international lily pad researcher set up a whole lily pad research institute there, and he was looking at aquatic plants. And there's the kind of old pilings from those tanks that he was using for his research. And then there's the spring, and there's a boardwalk, and you can't hear I-4. It's just right off of the highway. It's absolutely magical.
Wow. I had stumbled across it when I was, writing about springs all the time, but I just kind of moved on because I couldn't find much about it online. That kind of sounds magical. Honestly, I think all springs are magical, but that sounds super magical.
I think it's really, I like it because it feels secret and it's just right there in Tampa.
Yeah. When I first read it, my mind immediately went to Eureka Springs, Arkansas.
Yeah, me too.
And then you started talking about gators. And I'm like, well, there are no gators there. But they have a 65-foot Jesus, but no gators. I'd rather have the gators. But yeah, it was. Thank you. I found the
park. Have you been there, Kathy?
No.
I'm going to put it on my list.
Yeah, we should definitely get out there.
Super, super small. So during the pandemic, I would go with a friend and just have lunch, just to eat outside. It's very, very tiny. So you don't need a lot of time. But I think reading about the history of the lily pad scientist is what's so interesting. All of my books are set in Florida. Everything I write, all 12 books, all Florida. And wow. This is part of a trilogy of, there's three books. So the first one's Present State of the Garden. And that's all Coffee Pot Bayou, all Snell Isle, all St. Pete poems. And there's some religious tones, like I'm using the garden as a metaphor for everything that we've lost in Florida by way of landscape and other ways too. And then the second one is Field Notes from the Flood Zone. And I don't think I need to explain that one to you. So I did the garden, the flood zone, and now women in Tampa talking about alligators is the suburb. And those three landscapes to me are Florida, the garden, the flood zone, and the suburb.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's the suburbs, we get painted with a bad, yeah. I live in a suburb, you live in a suburb, Rick, you live in a suburb. They get painted with kind of a bad brush, but I don't think that's necessarily true. There are certainly some that make me want to set them on fire, which I would never do. The ones where they clear cut everything and there's no shade and they just put the tract houses. You wrote about it, but your neighborhood is not like that if you're in Tampa Palms now.
No, it's beautiful. It's diverse in every sense of the word, both human and flora and fauna. This book is a love letter to the suburb because it's completely misunderstood.
Yeah, I mean, Rick, I think you live in one of the most beautiful suburbs I've seen in Florida.
I mean, it was a suburb in 1924. I don't know that I'd call it a suburb now, but
well, it's
definitely
not urban. It's not rural.
It's 2 miles from downtown, but definitely when it was built,
it's still an hour from downtown.
No, it's not an hour from downtown.
Everything in Orlando is an hour away from everything else.
When I go downtown, I leave 15 minutes ahead of when I need to be there. So.
Okay. Sorry.
So it's not that bad. But truthfully, it was outside the city limits when it was built. And so maybe that's the whole thing. It's context. You know, it's a suburb when it is built because it's outside the core of the city. But as the city grows, is it still a suburb? I don't know.
I mean, to me, a city is a walkable town center.
Okay.
And so to you, there's no commerce in your neighborhood. There's an elementary school, I think, nearby. In Victor's house, which, well, hi, Victor, I know you're out there listening.
I can walk to a bar. I can walk to a restaurant. I can walk to a pool supply place. I can walk
really?
To a vintage clothing store. Yeah, within blocks.
I walk to my Publix, my doctor. I could walk to the dry cleaner or restaurant. I'm right behind Publix. I walk more here than I ever did in St. Pete.
So maybe it's just a matter of semantics and, you know.
I don't know. I mean, I can walk or take my little repurposed golf cart to our downtown, but Gulfport's different. I mean, we're a suburb. Gulfport's downtown even feels two streets over feels like a suburb.
So you consider the whole town a suburb, even though it's
I would never say that because we have Gulfport listeners and they get very upset when you say that.
Yeah, because to me, it's got a sense of place and it was established historically years ago as its own little place.
Well, I live in what I call Upper Gulfport. Which is north of, I mean, people talk about like specific streets. Oh, I live on Upper Merriam or Lower Merriam. We have four distinct neighborhoods in Gulfport. We have the downtown, and the downtown is part of the historic waterfront. But we also have the Marina neighborhood. We have the Stetson neighborhood, which is characterized by a lot of Mediterranean homes. And then we have my neighborhood, which people try and call it the Garden District or the Tangerine neighborhood. It doesn't really have a name. But we have a coffee shop. And right on the city limits, we have a Dollar General that I hate. And we have a theater and a few other small things. But I have to walk, and it's like a 10-minute walk to get to a restaurant, which is fine. I'll do it because parking is at a premium. And really, I shouldn't be driving a mile unless it's thundering. But it does feel removed from downtown. I don't know. I mean, it's a definite sense of place in Gulfport. And I would just say Gulfport has its two main streets, three. And anything a couple blocks off of that feels like a different world to me. I don't know how to explain it. If I was a poet, I could find better words.
I think Gulfport is a town. It's a small town.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. It is a matter of semantics. So since we are talking about sense of place and places, and you talked about your Eureka Springs, are there other places in your book that you would recommend that people visit? Because we haven't really talked about Tampa much, have we, Kathy?
No, we have not talked about Tampa much.
So give us some places that you love.
Well, also, I want to say people hear Tampa and they think Franklin Street, they think Ashley Street. I want to stress that when we're talking about the Tampa where you live, Heather, this is what, North Tampa? What would you call Brusby Downs, Hunter's Green? I mean, what would you call it?
It's called New Tampa. And I grew up in the area. I grew up in Orlando, and I remember, you know, when Fowler was a two-lane road and Busch Gardens was out in the country, it was all cattle country. So the University of South Florida in Tampa, originally their mascot was the Golden Brahmins because the cattle, those
white cows. I never put that together.
those white cows were bred for high humidity and mosquitoes. So we were the golden Brahmins, but in the 50s, it didn't really catch on. You can't be walking around saying, go Brahmins. You know, there's so many reasons it's not going to work. So they changed it to the bulls, much mightier. But it was cattle country. I grew up in Orlando. My elementary school is right next to a big cattle ranch.
What school did you go to?
I graduated from Boone High. What neighborhood are you in, Rick?
I'm a short walk from Boone.
Okay.
So what neighborhood are you? Because I was trying to describe where you live to somebody. I finally just said he lives on Curry Ford Road, which I hope that's not giving away too much. But
no, because Curry Ford goes all the way to the Eagan Lockahatchie to downtown, almost downtown. So it's mostly branding, like you were saying about your neighborhood. So there are some realtors who started kind of this developing some things here, and they called it the Hourglass District. Now that is their nomenclature because the small lake that I live on is Lake Hourglass. I'm kind of sandwiched between downtown Orlando and Conway and Delaney Park and Bel Air, like right in the middle of all that stuff. So I know Boone well. I can hear when the bell rings there. So
that's so funny. I can still hear it in my brain as well. I think Tampa gets a bad reputation, and I love a chance to push against that because it's a class thing, right? Tampa has a lot of working class neighborhoods in it, and it's hard to market that if you're a real estate agent. So I'm a big defender of Tampa and get my back up when people are critical of it.
So I like Tampa a lot as a visitor, just because to me it has a very strong sense of history. And it seems very diverse. Now, this is my perspective as an outsider. Sorry to interrupt, Kathy.
No, go ahead. It's fine.
That's what I had to say. It's like my perception. I know people who are from Tampa who don't like Tampa, but I find it intriguing.
I love where I live. I'm within such easy reach of so many beautiful natural environments, from the Hillsborough River to state parks, county parks. And then there's this wonderful downtown, which is way hopping. They've extended our river walk now all the way from Channel Side way, way, way up through the Armature Works District. I don't know. There's so many things to explore, but I like and think like you guys, the off the beaten path track. So I'm always scared. Like, how much do I talk about it? How many people do we want coming?
Why don't we give your five things to do in, what would you call it? Heather's favorite five things in New Tampa. How
about
that?
Eureka Springs could be one of them.
I think we're going to definitely have to.
Sure. So it depends on who you are and how old you are. But there's a new bookstore in Ybor. Bookends, which you have to go to, a fabulous bookstore. And then Lettuce Lake Park. I mean, if you haven't been to Lettuce Lake, you have to go to Lettuce Lake Park. I would go to the university and just walk around the campus and explore and embrace just the gorgeous diversity. And is that four?
That's four.
And then ride your bike along the Riverwalk.
And I would, so from my experience, if you go to the campus, don't go in the afternoon in the summer because it's really, really hot. And that first time I went to USF, I did that and it was brutal and I hated it. The second time I went was this fall when I was doing my mural project and I loved it. And I found these wonderful little, you know, one is a great collection of mid-century architecture because so much of it was built during that era. And I found like shade and just lovely little spots that I didn't know was there at USF. And then on the Riverwalk, one of my favorite places is Eulalie Springs, which is a spring that by the Armature Works kind of, that has been restored and is quite wonderful and magical. I keep saying that because that's the word I think of when I think of springs. So that's my contribution. Those are great. So tell us about the Lettuce Lake.
Lettuce Lake is right off of Fletcher and it's a county park. It's got a great boardwalk and an observation tower and a beautiful paved path and a ton of new play equipment and exercise equipment. It's just a really smart park that is very attentive to ability, differing abilities. It's a really gorgeous space, all shade, all day, all night. So you would love it, Rick.
I'm all about the shade this time of year.
Well, you Nordic folk. There is also, and we've never talked about this, but I feel like we need to mention it maybe now. Hillsborough County, first of all, they have an incredible public lands program. I mean, mm-hmm. I do applaud them for that because they have such a great, great thing. And I will put a link to all the places you can hike in Hillsborough. They mm-hmm. have an annual hiking challenge. And I can't, of course, I can't find the link right now. I don't know if it's I don't know if it's over the summer or over the winter, but basically you can get a little reward from them. They want you to get out and hike mm-hmm. different places. And my friend Emilio told me about it. I don't know if he listens to the podcast, but they definitely have, they say they have more than 300 miles of trails, but they have a lot of diversity in Tampa. I mean, if you're driving through Tampa and you're thinking of downtown and Dale Mabry, really, really missing a lot. I mean, they've got Lettuce Lake, you mentioned, but also Cockroach Bay Preserve is some beautiful kayaking. Mm-hmm. And then I think there's also some hiking that you can do there. I've never done that. I've only kayaked it. But they do have the hiking challenge that is pretty cool. It's called, I believe it's called the Hiking Spree. I just found it. I'm so excited. Mm-hmm. Have you done this?
No.
Okay, so...
Yeah, I know of it. And at the parks, they have the different signs. So it's really easy access, easy to get involved.
Right. So November 1st through March 31st, which makes sense. It wouldn't be this time of year. I'm one of the only people. I'm like, yes, let's go for a walk outside. It's June. It feels great. They have different trails that you can hike. So depending on how fit you are or how much you want to do, how long you want to go. They have neighborhood trails, conservation, they have nature preserves, they include the Florida State Parks. And they have a really good little guide if you've never hiked before. There's a lot of places to get outside in Tampa. And I realize everyone's listening to this in June going, screw you, Celestri, we're not doing that. But basically, they want you to do 8 hikes as a minimum, and you get a patch or a medallion. And if you hike with your dog, you can get a little bandana for your dog.
I love that so much.
Yes. It's really, I mean, it's a great way to encourage kind of passive activism. There was a book I had to read in grad school called Uncommon Ground by Cronin. And in it, he talked about the idea of wilderness is really kind of an illusion, because once humans enter the wilderness, it's not technically wild anymore. But from that comes the argument that we can't really expect people to want to protect something they can't interact with or see or touch. Like, it's just an abstraction to them. Mm-hmm. And I think Hillsborough County, as long as we're talking about Tampa and Hillsborough County, they really do an excellent job of subversively getting people to be stewards of the land. It's like a little subversive activism.
And that's how I see my poetry class. The first activity we do is we go outside and you sit, and the assignment is to just look at something, just look at it for 5 minutes without checking your phone or talking. It's really hard to do. But once you start to notice what you notice, not only are you then able to be a much better writer in any genre, but I think then you start to have a relationship. That's the beginning of building that relationship with place, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's, I don't understand people who move to Florida and don't like to go outside, because it's just, there's so much about our outdoors that really centers me in the state. Like, I know I talk about salt water more, Rick is more fresh, but,
I'm brackish.
she's split the difference. I think it's really a good point, because I do think that people live in their little air-conditioned bubbles in Florida, especially this time of year. And it's really easy to do now. And I think you have, it takes a little effort to get out there, especially this time of year. But I don't know. I'm fed so much by it. You know, I couldn't wait to get out this morning and see, you know, what had happened after the rain. You know, about how, I missed the big bloom last night and all that stuff. Every morning, I love to get outside and kind of explore my world and see what's happened and how it's changed.
I'm with you. I get outside every day. I love being outside in summer. I call it summerizing. And so it's just like, you just have to, there's no bad weather. There's just bad clothes. You just have to go outside. It's not hard. I love being outside in Florida in summer. I don't understand people who have a kind of fear of it. I think it's so weird.
I don't either. But I also, we have a really nice screened back porch and ceiling fans. And that's where I read your book. I went out there. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there are certain times of the day where it's not as pleasant as others. And yes, sometimes I do put ice on my head while I sit out there if it's particularly hot, but it really is. I love watching. I love watching, mostly now squirrels and jays, but crows too, and the snakes and all that stuff.
I feel like I really need this photo for my Instagram, Kathy, you with the ice on your head reading my book.
Well, I didn't have ice on my head this morning, but I will probably have a photo on my Instagram that you can share.
I will say this for our listeners, Kathy's hair does appear to be dry this morning, so I can verify that she didn't have ice on her head, but so, I do agree. We need that photo.
I will work on it. So the reason my hair is dry is I have not showered yet today because we're going out on the boat. Okay. And it was just pointless. But I'll tell you what, I'll have Barry take a picture of me. I don't have a hard copy of your book, so it's just going to be my iPad.
It's okay. Reenactment will work.
We can do it. Well, and also that's fine. I mean, it's reality. And I think the last time I did that, I might have just been honestly sitting out there in my bra and underwear. So probably good that we didn't have a photo.
So coming full circle back to the book.
Oh, please God, yes.
So do you have anything planned for your launch date? Are you doing anything fun?
Yes. So what I'm going to do, because a lot of my readers are not in Florida, I'll have an online launch on next Wednesday at 6 p.m. on Zoom. And my dear friend Kelly Shetron, a former student, is going to host and lead the conversation. I will be talking about how I made the book, and then we'll take questions. And we're encouraging everyone to bring a Florida cocktail or Florida-based mocktail. And it should be fun. I'm excited about that. And then I'm hoping to do an in-person launch at this new bookstore I mentioned earlier in Ybor City in Tampa, Bookends, which is started by two sisters. And they're just now opening, so I don't have that date set yet. But if you follow me on social, I post everything there, and also on my website, heathersellers.com. So I've got those two events, and then I'll be at the Dalí Museum in St. Pete.
Cool.
September 10th, as part of their really gorgeous poetry series. So I'll be reading from the book in September when the scared of summer people come back, right? Our fellow citizens who can't handle it here during the summer. So their series closes down over the summer. And then I'll be going to Michigan and New York to do readings there.
Wow.
Did you say Michigan and New York?
Yeah.
Michigan and New York. Okay. I'm here. It's fine. Just took me a minute. So I want to say we're going to have links in the show notes. Definitely going to have links to your website. And I just signed up for your newsletter, and I encourage other people to do that because I will not remember September 10th, right? So I need to have that little prompt, and it's nice to have that prompt. So
my newsletter is very short. It's very not annoying. It doesn't come out too often. It comes out the exact right amount of time. So I'm so thrilled that you signed up for that. And if your listeners want to join my newsletter, they can just go to my website and there's a sign up.
Right. Where it's in the show notes, heathersellers.com. There's a tab for the newsletter. So it's pretty easy. And I assume you probably have too much going on to spam people with a bunch of email, right?
Yeah. It comes out 6 times a year.
Yeah, that's what I tell people when I'm like, you have a newsletter sign up. I said, but it's monthly and it's really not. Like, it's I'm taking the summer off. I think I've done two or three newsletters this year. I'm like, it's 6 weeks or so. You know, I don't have time to, you're out doing the things, right? So
does it actually drive traffic? I mean, do you see this, the analytics?
Yeah, it does. And people are, people respond to it also, which I think is great. People will reply back to me. And I love that. And like our most recent paid subscriber was already, I believe, a newsletter subscriber. So yes. And it's, I have my website does pretty well, but it's a pretty good URL. GreatFloridaRoadTrip.com is.
As your writing journey continues and you write about famous Florida women and stuff, will you change your website or will you just fold it all into that?
I'll fold it into that. I have too much traffic right now to do that. And people are finding me. Apparently, I had an ad agency that I'm not going to jinx anything, reach out to me for something. And I said, out of curiosity, how did you find me? And they said that they were looking for Florida experts about citrus and food.
Awesome.
So I might buy another URL and redirect to it. So I can give it like I own floridaspectacular.com and all it is a redirect to greatfloridaroadtrip.com. I own kathycelestri.com and it just redirects.
So no, in my mind, I was thinking what URLs do I own? I have rickkilby.com, kilbycreative.com. And I think I have a couple for my book, but I don't even remember. I had Finding the Fountain of Youth. Do I have Florida's Healing Waters? I don't know. But yeah, it's one of those things you do as you come out with more titles, you know, you keep, you know, shifting your brand a little bit. And, you know, as it evolves, hopefully it evolves with you.
Right now, my focus is on my fiction. So I want to finish that first fiction book this summer. So I'm doing that. So I'm not even thinking about the women. I just, it's overwhelming to think about everything at once. But I'm not technically on summer vacation until the day after tomorrow. But by the time this podcast publishes, I will be. So I have to... I have two talks at the Villages tomorrow. So,
going back to Heather.
Heather, we're talking about Heather now.
So, when your launch event online happens, this podcast will not have aired yet. Is that going to be documented somewhere so we can find it online after the fact, or is it live and then gone?
It's live and then gone.
Okay.
I'm not going to record it. I want people to be able to speak freely. And just ask questions and have it be informal. So I'm not going to record it.
Okay.
But I do lots of other events. And again, they're on my website and in the newsletter.
I will say I have envy because my book came out during the pandemic. And the whole time I was working on that book, you know, one of my carrots, you know, that kept me going was visualizing the big launch of my book.
Yeah. My last two books came out during the pandemic. It was so hard. So this has been incredibly exciting, like to get to talk to you guys today. And I was on Fox News 13, Tampa, Florida, last week. And it's just been incredibly fun to come out into the world and be out in the world and all be together again.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love live book events. I really, the energy. And I love being at bookstores. Bookstores are the only place I won't charge, obviously, to speak. Because
really?
Yeah, I don't charge a bookstore. They're selling my books. I mean, I would charge Barnes & Noble, but they would never have us. They don't do that anymore. But I'm not going to charge an independent bookstore. They're the ones selling my books. The booksellers are the ones who make our books successful.
No, I agree on that. Even if it was out of town?
Yeah. Yeah, I won't charge a bookstore. I mean, the bookstores I speak at are... I try and book something in conjunction. I mean, I'm not... You know, I try and make sure if I'm going out, I have research to do, or I can book a paid gig, or we can turn it into a camping trip. Because there's so much material out there that's not hard. But yeah, I mean, so first of all, I write about Florida, so it's not like I'm going to get asked to come to Michigan and speak about my book. So the bookstores are in Florida, and by and large, they're all small bookstores. I mean, they're just out there fighting the good fight, trying to, you know, keep it together. I got to tell you, it was rough after the pandemic, or not the pandemic, after the storms. Try releasing. I mean, nothing compares to the pandemic, but my book came out right before those two 2024 storms. And I lost a lot of signings because the bookstores were,
yeah.
So it's been a hard decade for books. Let's just say that. But Heather, I think you have some great stuff lined up, and we don't hear a lot about Florida poets. There's only two others I can think of, and I don't even know if one of them is still alive. So,
I had Billy Collins on my trivia team a couple months ago. It was pretty awesome.
Wow. Oh, that's so great.
And we won.
Oh, that's good. He's a friend, and he blurbed my very first book of poetry.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wonderful to have him here in Florida again.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have loved having you on the podcast. We're going to put a bunch of links in the show notes.
Thank you. It's so good to meet you, Kathy and Rick. It's been just a delight to talk about Orlando and Gulfport and Tampa and all these places and all these hidden places. Thank you so much for having me.
No, thank you for being on the podcast, and thank you for being out there fighting the good fight for our little Cayman friends. What?
I just wanted to say that Mark Barrow's book is coming out this fall that we had him on. He's writing a book on alligators. And
He said that was a long time coming. That was a long time ago.
So there's pre-orders available now. So for those who are like us, you know, in love with the alligator, alligator supporters or boosters, whatever you call them.
Advocates.
His is going to be like the definitive book. So I'm kind of excited about that. We maybe have to do more. Maybe we should do like a big alligator, a month of alligator stuff.
I would love that. I would love to do an alligator meetup for the podcast, but I'm worried that sends the wrong message.
Like how?
I don't know. I mean, it would almost have to be something we found. We could all meet up in the swamp. We could all go down to Clyde Butcher's gallery. I don't know. I am more disturbed at there seems to be, for some reason, I don't know if it's my Instagram reels or my TikTok, I seem to be getting there's a couple of alligator facilities that are filming themselves working with the alligators, and I think it's sending the wrong message.
Yes.
I'm very concerned about that because they're interacting with them and acting like they're puppies. And I know we joke and call them swamp puppies, but it sends a very dangerous message to people. Familiarity is not good for a gator. Like,
or the human.
Yeah. We're in no danger of dying out.
You're saying we could afford to lose a few?
I'm saying the earth needs to lose a few, and I've got a list. But anyway.
Miss Parker.
She's dead. And in fact, in my Florida Spectacular, I had another teacher, this wonderful woman, Shirley Moravac. She taught me journalism, creative writing in high school. She read my book and she emailed me, and she's kept in touch with me. She was mortified. She goes, "Oh my God, was that me? Did I do that?" And I'm like, "Oh my God, no, I wouldn't have talked to you she felt so bad." Like, and I think as a teacher, she felt bad that anybody would discourage someone from writing. So
I think in your fiction that Mrs. Parker needs to be eaten by an alligator.
No, I'm not going to have any. There's no stupid Florida men, and there's no alligator violence.
Okay.
No alligator and shark attacks. Absolutely not. But the machineal tree, I think you could probably take that and make a nice tea out of it, is just what I'm saying. So, in a book, of course.
Well, I have to see the book because that went right over my head.
The machineal tree. It's in South Florida. It's they call it the death tree. It's very popular in the Keys. Not popular, but it's prominent. It is the tree that the ancestors of the Seminole, or I guess they would be the Seminole, they dip their arrows, I believe, in its sap, and that's what hit Ponce de Leon.
Oh,
yeah.
So they say.
I don't know. I saw where his remains were. He went to Cuba. Yeah, he went to Cuba to die, and then they shipped him over to Puerto Rico. I went to the church because, of course, if there's a Florida connection, I can be in the Caribbean and I'm going to find Florida, right?
So, that's awesome. I had no idea you went there.
Yeah, we went there in March. It was part of that big long cruise we were on. And I was desperate to see where Ponce de Leon was buried. Make sure he's really dead. He's done enough damage. All right. Guess what time it is, Rick?
Betts Brothers Adventure Time.
That's not what they're called.
What?
They're the Betts Boys.
Oh, Betts Boys. Sorry.
Sorry,
they
Betts
are
boys.
Brothers, aren't they?
I think so. I don't know.
Sorry, I didn't know. It's about.
I don't know Betts how much boys. We should be talking about the inner workings of two minor children on a public podcast. I'm very worried about that. But
for some reason, maybe it's the alliteration. I can always remember them.
Betts Boys Adventure.
Davita
yes.
Breyer, Ryan Worthington. God, you'd think I'd have it memorized by now.
So what we're doing, Heather and listeners, is we are thanking the people who pay us to support the podcast. And so we shout out, of course, Rick, you missed your namesake.
Oh, Mr. Kilby. Yeah.
Mark Kilby.
Yeah.
Chica Fant, our newest listener. Chica, please, if you didn't get an email from me, reach out, Kathy@FloridaSpectacular.com, because I need some information so we can send you cool stuff. Nicole Amrose, Sean Coulter, Kelly Sturdy, Celeste Welch at Sulcata Grove, Stephanie Hughley, Brad Sager, Brian Woodall. You mentioned Betts Boys Adventure, Elise Smith. You mentioned Davita. You mentioned Ryan. There's Angela Connolly and Natalie Zacharick. And I have to look it up every week because I don't want to miss anybody. So I'm impressed that you remember anything at all.
Natalie Zacharick. I should have remembered that one too.
You should.
We have good, our listeners have the best names.
We're not biased at all, though.
No.
Our paid listeners have the best names. All right. That's going to do it for us this week. We will be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. Thanks for listening, Heather. Thanks for being on the podcast. You guys go get outside, literally go touch grass, but a Florida grass, not turf grass.